player, bing me. You bing me, I'll slap a hoe.
Emails.podbing.com.
It's Google, motherfucker.
Welcome to the Call of Ian, you cock-sucking motherfucking dog shit ass cunt bitch.
Welcome to ianellis.podbean.com. I'm your host, Ian Ellis. Today we're doing a behind-the-scenes look at With Apologies. Now, I'm not into sports, and part of the reason I'm not into sports is that I have no idea what the fuck is going on. I don't understand the plays, I don't know the rules, I don't know when people get points or why they get points. To me, it's just a bunch of dudes running around in tights looking gay. So it's hard for me to get into sports. I'm going to give you the behind the scenes of what I do on my end of With Apologies so that you can kind of see the plays and understand the rules as far as how I govern the show. And hopefully that'll deepen everybody's understanding of the show. This is going to be a lot of shop talk. This is like a State of the Union, once every couple of the years episodes. You've never heard a host sit down and explain how the show works, why it works, and what the goals they're moving toward actually are beyond, I just want to get bigger and get that bag. That's not what we're doing here. So, with apologies, this show started off with Nick and CEO. They were a couple of best friends, and they had Dante Nero on as a guest. At the time, their show was called Red Phillip. And Dante and I were friends at the time, and Dante asked them if they would have me on as a guest. So Dante Nero essentially created With Apologies as we know it today. They had me on, and I really enjoyed what Nick and Chris were doing. They called themselves a junior O&A at the time. That's exactly what I was looking for in the world of podcasting, because most podcasting at that time was just Marc Maron style sit-down interviews where you go for process, whereas they were actually like trying to be funny and trying to have a point of view and taking risk. And the relationship that developed between us as I became third mic is the show kind of turned into a soap opera. So Chris and Nick, or CEO and Nick, they have nothing to do with the stand-up comedy world. They watch a lot of comedy. They watch a lot of O&A. They were fans of comedy and broadcasting at the time. But they weren't part of the game. Whereas I'm like within a comedy scene. And when you're in a comedy scene, you start hanging out with the same people. And before you know it, you start submitting to groupthink. And so part of the dynamic of the show is that CEO, this guy who was outside of my comedy scene, would call bullshit on me in all the ways that I was forsaking funny for the sake of fitting in. And he knew how to hold my feet to the fire. So the soap opera was the drama of CEO pulling my skirt up and telling me I gotta quit being a bitch and start being on the side of funny. And then the turnaround was that I started holding him to account about his life decisions. His many, many poor life decisions. And then, of course, Nick had a mental breakdown. He quit the show. CEO, myself, and Bellland started working together. I was filming a comedy special. Bellland is my agent. He wanted me to get some video of what I do because this audio-only shit wasn't attracting anybody. And at the time, CEO had been trolling this guy's Saiyans. And so we started just trolling random shows and seeing if we could get them to say, who is Ian Ellis? And we were just going to cut that footage together. But we had a lot of fun doing it. And then we met Unbleached, and we got this idea of a goof of bringing back With Apologies, but making Unbleached into Nick. It's a petty little joke that was supposed to go for a couple episodes. It worked for a couple episodes, and it fell apart, but then Ross Dog stepped up and said, hey, if you guys actually want to bring the show back, I'll, like, produce this. I'll do this. Let's bring the show back. So our random trolling to advertise the name Ian Ellis turned into bringing the show With Apologies back. Now we had two new co-hosts that were added to the show, Ross and his buddy Jay. Ross initially just wanted to be the producer, And so I would say stuff like, Ross, you want to say something? Because I really felt bad for him just sitting there having to listen to us ramble but not getting to participate in the fun. And I wanted him to get in on the fun. And as time passed, he got more comfortable. And now he's very comfortable on the mic. And he's moved up to personality status. He's the third co-host, the third leg of the show. Jay, I didn't like for reasons we're going to be getting into. I'm not specifically going to be talking about him, but I'm going to talk about what I do when I produce this show. And as you understand that, you'll understand why I didn't like working with Jay. That decision will start to make more and more sense. So let's start with some talk about comedy. The Denver Institute for Comedy, their theory on it is that comedy, they call it benign violation theory. So the key to comedy is a benign violation of linguistic norms, physical norms, social norms. It's taking reality and in some way just changing one little thing and creating an incongruity. And that incongruency, because it doesn't match up with our pattern recognition of the world, it causes people to laugh. Awkwardness causes people to laugh. The heart of most humor is that there's either a victim or an incongruity. So even when I'm being mean to people, the humor of it is that nobody would ever be this mean. So I am joking around, but the joke is I'm being meaner than any person would ever be, and that makes people uncomfortable, and that's what the humor of the situation is. Or if I create an awkward situation like with Luis J. Gomez or with Hostbuster, most people never have uncomfortable conversations, and they especially don't have them publicly on the radio. So if I disengage from the flowery world of, I'm just here to promote you, you're here to promote me, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back, we'll make sure everybody looks good. If I go, nope, I'm going to be an asshole. I don't care how I look. And by the way, I'm going to force you to have an opinion on things that you're not comfortable having an opinion on. That awkwardness, for me, creates an incredibly humorous situation. So benign violation. You don't have to focus on it too much, but just the thing I want you to understand is that like a linguistic change. And instead of saying I'm going to go eat an apple, I'm going to go eat the asshole out of a fruit bowl. That's a wrong way of saying it, but it's more humorous and more colorful. So in terms of comedy, that's a decision that you make. Now, I can't just enjoy comedy anymore. I got a Facebook notification that I've been friends with this girl, Maggie Edney, for 11 years. I met Maggie at like my second or third open mic ever, which means I've been doing this for 11 years. 11 years into the game, I can't passively enjoy comedy. But what I can do, what I do appreciate, is the decisions that I see people making. It's very rare that somebody actually makes me laugh. That's why CEO is so important to me, because he still can say stuff that catches me so off guard that it actually makes me laugh. That's why he's my favorite person in the whole wide world. So newer comics, they're trying to build an act, and it takes a long time to get your material together, especially when you're new. You're learning what's funny about you, what you want to say, how to make the things you want to say funny, and there's a lot of pressure at that lower level to, can you get 5 minutes that's funny? Can you get 8 minutes that's funny? Can you do 15 minutes because that's a showcase? Can you do 30 minutes because then you can middle? Can you do an hour? Because then you can be a headliner. And people are in a rush to make it. They think you start and 6 weeks later, you're on Letterman. They don't realize it's an unbelievably long process, most of which is just learning and then unlearning habits. You're learning these different tools, how to, you know, break linguistic norms, break physical norms, look for outside opinions, when to use non sequiturs. You're learning these tools, but you're not supposed to stick to them to the point that it becomes a formula. You just pick up the tool and then you move on and you develop the next tool. And then eventually you have enough tools that you can execute whatever idea you want to execute. So you can tell when a comic is new or unprepared by the decisions that they're making as they're performing. A new comic isn't going to make that many decisions. They're going to stick very strictly to the things they have to say. So if the audience is reacting in a way that doesn't flow with their material, they're not going to adjust their material. If they start to think of something funnier, they're not going to go down that path. They're going to immediately jump back to their material because they're scared that if they get too far off the path, they won't be able to get back to their script that they're performing. They basically are actors doing a monologue at those early stages. Now, as you do it longer and longer, material starts to become less and less precious. That's if you're prolific, if you're invested in the craft of, I want to be a great comic. There's the comics that want to make a product. I want to make this hour. And they workshop that material until it works. And then they use that material until it's sold. And then there's other people that are like, I just want to be the best at this I can possibly be. And that's my camp of comedy, where it's like, just keep making something new. Just keep learning new skills. And that way, when the opportunity comes, you're more than capable of delivering whatever you want to deliver, as opposed to, this rigid thing that you've workshopped to death and it feels lifeless and you don't have any passion for what you're saying. You're just, you're Chris D'Elia. You're making noises. You're squawking. You're pandering. It's a very low level of humor. To me, the higher levels are you taking intellectual risk? Are you taking emotional risk? Are you being edgy? To me, isn't using naughty words. Edgy to me is, are you saying stuff that's going to make people uncomfortable? And have you been doing it long enough to know the difference between how to kind of make them uncomfortable and how to completely turn the room on you? And part of, developing those skills is learning how to read the room and knowing how to pull your punches when you need to pull your punches. So everybody knows I'm a big Red Bar fan. I'm going to talk a little bit about why I'm such a big Red Bar fan. If you watch Red Bar, completely forget about everything he's talking about and what his point of view on what he's talking about is. What you should be able to appreciate, if you're into comedy, if you're into broadcasting, if this is something you want to do with your life, is the amount of decisions he's making, the speed at which he's making them, the quality of the decisions that he's making. He'll do a 4 to 6 hour show. He keeps a high level of energy where the show flows by very quickly. And within that, he makes a million decisions. He uses wrong words. He goes into song parodies. He'll have an aside where he just, waxes philosophically on an issue for 10 minutes and then randomly goes to the chat or whatever he feels is funny at the time. And he's not confined by a formula. He's free in his funny. And that's like the ultimate goal if you want to be a great performer. The other thing that I love about him, Patrice O'Neill, and we could throw in Adam Carolla. I haven't really listened to Carolla in years. But I love the asides. I like people that they have a point of view, and within that point of view, they're going to give you something new, a new way of looking at the world. So most people, an issue gets thrown down, and they have a surface level reaction to it. Their reaction is based on their political affiliation. Their reaction is based on the first humorous thought that comes to their mind, which is basically like a meme level of thinking, or a cheap joke level of thinking. And then there's people that they catch some small thread within the issue that completely pulls the entire idea apart. There's something that CEO is amazing at, Patrice was amazing at, Mike David is amazing at, and we can throw in maybe Carolla. I'm sure there's other people, but those are the guys that I know. So I'm going to be jumping all over the place here. One thing I really like is energy. I like a show that if it's 2 hours long, it feels like it was 10 minutes long. I like it to be fast-paced so that the listener, and I am the listener of my show, is engaged the entire time. Now, one thing that I really fucking hate about every other show is this informal hangout. Podcasting as it began, a lot of it was interviews, you know, based off of the success of Marc Maron. But then so many podcasts came out that the people that were being interviewed and doing the interviews eventually wound up going on 8 million shows and repeating themselves over and over again. So it became like an unsustainable model because you can only interview, you know, you can only have those deep conversations so many times. So then what you got was the Opie and Anthony spinoff, which was you want to have a group of guys that are funny come together and be funny. Now, with random people, it's very hard to hit that chord because they have to have chemistry. What worked about Opie and Anthony is Opie, Anthony, and Jimmy had chemistry, and then they could bring in other people, and if that person worked, it would be an amazing show, and if that person didn't work, they could still rely on their own personal chemistry to carry the show. So people think that, you know, if you want to just be real, what you want to do is just show up, turn on the mic, and go. And that is a very lazy way of doing a show. If that's the level of entertainment you're into, that's fine, but that's not what I'm doing. When I am hosting a show, I'm conducting a symphony. I'm playing all of these different personalities against each other and against my own thoughts for the purposes of being as entertaining as possible and keeping the momentum and the energy flowing as quickly and as best as I can. Now, like within Opie and Anthony, Opie doesn't get enough credit because what he did and what the interns that worked around him did is they went and they found the subjects for them to talk about. So it wasn't like they just showed up and started yapping, because I think they did shows like 5 days a week. 5 days a week, 3 hours at a time, you run out of stuff to talk about. You have to have people going and finding these different news articles, wacky articles, TV shows, this, that, and the other. Now, people that do too many shows, like Luis J. Gomez does too many shows, Joe Rogan does too many shows, they get burned out and they lose their passion for what they're doing, and then you just end up with this watered-down, meaningless product. I like With Apologies being once or twice a week, or With Apologies once a week, and Ian Ellis Podcast once a week. But beyond that, I don't feel like I have enough to say to want to be on the mic, and I don't want to burden my audience or burn out my audience with meaningless horseshit content. I don't want to just throw together a show for the sake of, I just need a show, just need to fill the time. I'm not here to fill the time. I'm here to deliver a product, and the product is entertainment. So within our show, there's a variety of different characters. I am both the Opie and the Anthony because I am the only one that does show prep. So it's up to me to have all the different topics, but I'm also the leader in terms of, like, I got to kind of decide who gets to talk and when they get to talk for the sake of the show flowing. So we have personalities, characters, and fools. These are kind of the three basic archetypes of on-air people that you hear from. Personalities are myself, Ross Dog, CEO, Cosmic Cam, Rex, Helen DeKeller. These are people that they're good at this. They're naturally funny. They understand how to follow the flow. Like if you listen to the Lemonade thing, Jay King came up with this line where he goes, "Lemonade, we're not your ex-husband." And I picked up on it right away where it was like, oh, we should do like that Fight Club thing. Like, I am Robert Paulson or whatever the fucking line is. So Cosmic started to say something. I go, Cosmic. We're not your ex-husband. And he picked up on it right away, and then it became three of us chanting this back at her, and that's what made the bit work, because he understood how to take notes or take direction from the person conducting the symphony. So those are the personalities. Then you have characters. As you hear about these people, try to divorce yourself from the idea of, like, these people are good and these people are bad. In theory, they're all good as long as they're entertaining. Somebody's only bad to me if they're fucking up the flow of the show, and that's when they need to get kicked the fuck out. A character is someone like Joe Booney, Kenny, maybe Andy. These are people that, like, Wendy. These are incredibly entertaining personalities that are effortlessly funny, but they're not self-aware of the fact that they're being funny. They don't understand what's funny about them. And again, it's not a bad thing. I love Joe Booney. I think Joe Booney is a consummate entertainer. Like, much like Mike David, if you want to take notes, go watch an episode of Joe Booney. He puts as much into broadcasting about sports as the sports player is put into playing the game. He gets dressed up. He has music cues. He's running around. He's tearing clothes off. He's ripping things off the wall. He's acting like a lunatic. And it's all for the sake of being entertaining. And then the third tier from now would be the Fool. Now, the Fool, you can look at it in a variety of different ways. Fool would be like Rev or Andy. These are people that they can't find the rhythm and the flow of the show, and they keep fucking things up. And they fuck things up to the point that we can no longer work with them as a character, and now we just need to beat them up and get rid of them. I'm sorry, Rev. I actually really like Rev as a character, but he had such a negative effect on the rest of the show, which I don't really pay attention to the Discord and the RDA as much, but apparently he had a very bad, you know, reputation over there that affected his reputation at With Apologies. If he only ever showed up to With Apologies, he would be fine as a character. But the fact that he's constantly triggering people in these other domains, you know, that shit washes up on my shore, and for the sake of the show, I need to kick him the fuck out every once in a while. Because it gets distracting having people constantly call in to cuss him out over issues that I have no idea what the fuck they're talking about. So, within the show, if it's just the main character, say it's me, CEO, Ross Dog, and Lane, we start off with a topic, and I'm willing to let that topic breathe. Meaning, like, any microsecond of dead air to me feels like bombing. I feel it in my bones. My blood runs cold when there is a moment of silence. I have a visceral reaction to silence where I don't like it. That means the energy is dying. That means it's not working. Now, I can be overly pushing people to have something to say every second. Like, it can be, CEO would say, like, he feels like he can't breathe because if he stops talking for even a second, I change the subject and I move to something else. When we have just the core characters, it's easier for me to relax and just let things happen. And I do my best to pay attention to what other people are doing, but there have been times when I've missed what was being said and then just changed the subject, and then I go back to the replay and I'm like, fuck, man, they were having a really funny conversation, and I completely fucking took it in a different direction, which is the value of CEO telling me to shut the fuck up. And as Belle Ann pointed out on the last With Apologies, whatever thing I'm talking about in the back of my head, I am thinking about the next thing that we're going to talk about as soon as this thing stops. So, like, the average amount of time somebody spends talking on our show is 3 seconds. I know this from animating the various episodes. So basically, a premise gets thrown out, and you got 3 seconds to be funny. And if that funny can snowball and get bigger and bigger, we'll stay there for as long as it works. But if there is a second of silence, then I'm jumping to the next thing so we can keep the momentum going. This isn't that hard with the personalities, but the chaos, the part that makes this a very, very frustrating show to host, is that we have these characters. And I don't want to get rid of the characters. I love the characters. But if I'm trying to, if we have a bit that we're working on, and then that's interrupted by table talk or side conversation between Ing and Kenny, or Kenny just wandering back into the room and saying some asinine, inane thought that has nothing to do with anything, suddenly the focus goes from the bit that we're working on to dealing with them. And it's very, in my mind, difficult to go, you know, once the flow is interrupted, I don't want to go backtrack to get back to the bit. It's this person has interrupted it. All right, throw it in the trash. We're going to the next bit. And so I'm constantly redirecting the show to stay in a direction that's moving with momentum. And I can understand how that can be very frustrating and difficult to deal with. Now, Ross, a lot of times it's just me and him. When I'm before the show, I'll be like, hey, is this person here? Is this person here? It's because once I see CEO isn't showing up, it's very easy for me to sit and talk to CEO because he and I have a lot of chemistry. If he's not going to be there, then that means 100% of the heavy lifting is going to be on me. I got to generate the topics. I got to keep the momentum going. I got to balance all these fucking idiots out. So if I could pull a couple more personalities in, that gives me a little bit more space to breathe and assess the situation so that I can make better decisions within the moment. Which the more people that are on there, sometimes the harder that is. But if you do listen to the show, even going back, you know, through these older episodes, this is something that happens a lot. You'll be listening and things will be going bang, 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 bang. And then I'll leave and take a break. And suddenly it's like all the air has left the room. And that's when it turns into this informal hangout, which I hate. Now, I don't want the show to just be joke, joke, joke. That's kind of like what This American Dream is. It's a joke machine, or Cumtown is a joke machine. I like the asides. Cumtown is at its best when Nick Mullen is having a point of view and having an opinion on something that he's very serious about. And it's at its worst in like the first 5 minutes of the show, literally almost every show that they do, everybody sounds like they're exhausted and they don't want to be there. And then it takes them like 10 minutes to build up the energy to actually want to be on the show. So I don't really talk to the guys on the show outside of the show. And part of the reason for that is I want to be excited when I get to sit down and talk to them. I want to have 50 things to tell them, as opposed to like, if I talk to CEO throughout the week, anything I talk to him on the phone about, he doesn't want to talk about on the show. And I've tried prompting him, you know, we'll have an hour and a half long conversation where I'll be in tears laughing. And then we get on the show and I try to prompt him to talk about something, and he feels like that's disingenuous and forced, so he doesn't want to do it. Or at least that's what I assume he thinks. I got no idea what goes through that man's mind. But when I am talking and Ross is there, Ross feels like unless I'm addressing him personally, I'm not talking to him. Ross, if I'm talking and you're there, I'm talking to you. I'm talking to whoever is in the room, and it is on you to jump in. And as far as like engaging in a one-on-one conversation, Ross and I haven't built up the chemistry to do that because we move in two different directions. He lives in this, battle world where, you know, it's all about fighting and antagonizing people. And I live in this comedy world. And he doesn't like the comedy world because he sees that as clickbaity horse shit that everybody else is talking about. But that's the world that I come from. And when I have an opinion on someone like Joe Rogan or Chris D'Elia, it's not a clickbaity opinion. It's not a review. It's criticism. It's sharp criticism from an 11-year comic who has 11 mixtapes, who's done 50,000 hours of podcasting, and I know what I'm talking about, and I'm giving you a more honest assessment and opinion on them than you're going to get from anybody else. Because other comics aren't honest about other comedians. But because I've had CEO fucking sticking a knife in my heart, and because I watch Red Bar, I've broken myself away from the dick-sucking cycle of wanting to fit in and, build a social network. I burn a bridge first, and then if you want to swim over, that's cool, but the bridge is going down. That's the way I operate. There's a value to doing that, because part of what we're doing, if you want to talk about this in a broad philosophical sense, is we're on the side of funny and we're pulling skirts up on all this shit that isn't funny. And specifically comedy podcasts. All of us here loved comedy podcasts. All of us loved Opie and Anthony, maybe Howard Stern, Tough Crowd, Patrice O'Neill. We were into this world of like guys sitting around, keeping it real, and putting funny first above pleasing the right people or protecting their social image. Which, in a world where like Google and YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, they're trying to shut down bullying. In the process of shutting down bullying, they've become anti-funny. So now is the most important time to stick up for funny. And not in the gay-ass way that like Revenge of the Sith or Sargon of Akkad does, where you're like, I'm gonna have an opinion on this article, harumpa-pump-pump, isn't it unfair what they're doing? That's playing their game. The better thing to do is to not play their game, but to just keep being funny. That's the revolutionary act in this time of censorship. That's the most important thing you can do, is continue to hold the line and say, I don't care how many times you delete me. I don't care how hard you push back. I want funny. This is my fetish. This is free speech. I want the freedom to do the funniest show I can do and fuck your feelings, because this is our thing. That's what we're fighting for in sort of a broad philosophical sense. Now, I guess we're kind of getting into goals here. There's the goal of making it, and making it just means making enough money that we don't have to have day jobs. The two major ways to do that are either like you get a paywall, Patreon only, whatever the fuck, or you take sponsorship. I'm not opposed to sponsorship. It just generally seems counterintuitive, and I hate ads because ads are, for me, the number one form of propaganda that is causing people to misfire and have wrong views of the world. I think most people live in these tiny little loops, and their identities, the characters they've created to live as, are based on shit that they got from commercials and TV, rather than anything that was genuinely fought for and earned as a human being. These are the NPCs. These are the people that what we're doing is not going to be for them. Those are the people that Google is trying to protect, because it makes it easier to manipulate them if you don't have people saying funny stuff. Now, here's kind of the power of funny, and this is the thing I'm most interested in, even beyond making it, quote-unquote, which would be nice. I'm not saying I don't want to make it, but the goal is that we want the world to reckon with us in a way that we're able to glitch out and warp and interrupt the way the world is actually operating. So the way you do that, Mike David is a great example of this. You know, he says when you go on a show, that's your chance to spaz out and say the craziest thing you can say. His YouTube has gotten to a point where he doesn't have to go on shows. He doesn't have to get co-signed by TV or Joe Rogan. He can just make a video and insert himself into a situation and say the crazy thing he wants to say. When you get 60,000 people, 60,000 views on a thing, the person you're talking about is going to be made aware of the fact that they're getting talked about. And if they respond, that blows it up, and then it goes from hundreds, you know, 60,000 to hundreds of thousands, possibly millions. And what that does is it interjects your ideas into the bloodstream of culture. And that's the biggest, you know, sort of the most profound thing you can do. Like, Mike had a video about this guy, Mike Maljik, from Logan Paul. Is Logan Paul a particularly interesting show? Not really. They're just fucking idiots that, you know, are self-aggrandizing, and they're just doing the cheapest thing they can to make as much money as they can. They're squeezing this audience for as much money as they can get. Mike covering them took thousands of their viewers and subjected them to first making fun of their heroes, but then he gave like a little speech on the end about the importance of having people around you that'll make sure you're doing the right thing and that you're not being disingenuous and that you're not selling yourself short and selling your audience short. And within this little 10-minute video, he interjected that idea into the bloodstream of those viewers. And that's a bigger thing that I want to see with apologies do in time. I want to take the mind of CEO, or like, you know, if we could go back in time, it's like, if you could take Patrice O'Neill and the amazing things he was saying on Opie and Anthony and expose that to a broader audience, it could have had a larger effect on the way people think. Like an example is Jon Stewart, when he went on Crossfire. He was like, you guys in the media play everybody left against right, conservative against liberal. But that's not the real fight. I mean, there's a bigger difference between people that have kids and people that don't have kids than there is between conservative and liberal. At the end of the day, you're all living in your loop. You're all just want to make as much money as you can and have the best quality of life for your family that you can. Most people agree on the basic things of food, shelter, opportunity. The real fight isn't left versus right, it's justice versus injustice. And if you can inject that idea into the broader, you know, cultural consciousness, into the zeitgeist, then when the media starts to do these left versus right things, cops versus BLM, if you can get someone thrown into that system that goes, whoa, 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 stop. No. Here's the injustice. Let's go justice versus injustice and focus on this. Fuck your teams. Fuck your sides. Let's focus on this. CEO is a guy that sees the this. Now, he has no ambition to change the world or even necessarily lose his day job. But that's what I want to do, and he's someone that I'm using to do that. Now, if we were just sitting here trying to do this 3D chess of like, well, we'll go after this guy, and then if we get this reaction, we can do that, and then, you know, step by step by step, that would be a phony horseshit show. The premium isn't on, you know, this broader sort of philosophical thing. I'm just sort of articulating the power that the show can have, the importance that the show can have, if we can hold the ship together long enough. The focus is on freedom. The freedom to say what we want to say and to do what we want to do, and then getting to glitch out reality, to me, that's a perk. That's like, that's a highlight of the show getting big enough. I was like, holy fuck, we get to do this? All right. We kind of did that with Luis J. Gomez. Started fucking with him, went on the show, and I dismantled his show right in front of him. Now, it didn't have any large lasting effect, but it did peel off a few people that saw what I was doing. They saw the plays I was making. They saw the decisions I was making. And they came over to With Apologies. And those are the guys we're looking for. We want the guys that have this free speech fetish. We want the guys that are tired of this phony, lazy horseshit that want real entertainment. They want a show with momentum. They want a show that isn't afraid to make the worst joke in the world. Speaking of being vile. So, you know, if you listen to the last With Apologies, I bring up Ross Dog saying the show should be more vile. That was an internal memo that I was alluding to. And I think Lane hit it on the head when he said, like, Ross, the point isn't to be vile for the sake of let me do the grossest thing I can do so I can get attention. The point is that we want to have the freedom to be vile when that's what funny calls for. When that's the best thing to do, the funniest thing to do, then go ahead and do that. All right, welcome back to part three. I'm now in my car recording this on my way to work, or before I walk into work. This is going to be Thursday's episode. Unless Ross Dog wants to do a Podbean, then there might be another episode. But otherwise, this is Thursday's. So I don't remember what I was talking about. But I want to talk about some of the things that makes With Apologies different from other shows. One thing is that we actually have confrontation on a variety of different levels. There's the immediate level of the co-hosts confront each other and don't let each other get away with bullshit, the soap opera aspect of it. Then there's dealing with the people that we're making fun of. We try to get them sucked into our world. We don't just make fun of people behind a keyboard from a distance. We make fun of them to their face, which is very valuable because nobody does that. Nobody actively invites somebody on their show for the sake of confronting them because we don't like what they do.
And as the show gets bigger, hopefully we'll be able to do that on a larger scale. Like Hostbuster is a character, I really like his assessment of other shows. He and I aren't getting along right now, but I still consider him a friend. And when I watch his show, he sees what I see, and sometimes he sees stuff that I miss, and he has a critical eye that is worth listening to in terms of, let's get rid of all of the bullshit that everybody else is doing that is wasting your time as an audience member, this quantity over quality. At the core of all of this is that we want some level of quality in our entertainment. And the reason I push so hard in all the different things that I'm doing is that I'm trying to make a quality show for our audience. Now, when I met Ross Dog, we met in person a few years ago. The thing I told him and Jay was like, you have to do this without ego. And without ego doesn't just mean don't get big-headed. Because success comes and goes. Like, getting on the Real Ass Podcast was not the top success of the show. It's just a minor stepping stone. It's a pebble in the beach. We're going to do significantly bigger things over time. And if you start looking down on the people that are participating in the show because you feel like you have some sort of clout or some sort of celebrity, it's not going to be fun for the people that are participating in the show. Nobody wants to deal with a prima donna and a dickhead. But the other side of no ego is not getting mad when you're getting shit on. Or when things aren't going your way, you have to come and go with empty hands. That's part of the freedom thing, part of the treating it like it's disposable thing. One thing I really like about Ross Dog is that he's willing to just let things get burned down and start over. You know, he has a channel that's monetized. The Ian Ellis LLC has a channel that's monetized. These guys are not married to holding on to that monetization. If they lose monetization, they don't give a fuck. If the channels get deleted, they don't give a fuck. They'll just start a new channel. The point isn't to build this monument to what we're doing. It's to keep the energy moving forward, to keep growing and changing, and figuring out where we want to go. And that means not clinging to things in a positive way or a negative way. You just take it all as it happens. Now, I woke up, it was like Christmas morning. It was like three videos this morning. Lemonade's exposing Bel Ann. HB is responding to Red Bar again. Clickbait took the last episode of With Apologies and clipped up like 48 minutes and was like, is this the end of With Apologies? This is nowhere near the end. The only way it ends is if me and Ross Dog throw in the towel. And I don't see that happening. But what we are is we're in the infancy stages of the show finding its identity. Like a lot of the ideas and concepts I'm spitting out here now, I haven't talked to anybody in the show about this. So they're probably like, Ian, why didn't you say this 2 years ago? It would have been so much easier if you had given us a little direction and told us this was what you were planning. But this hasn't been a direct plan. There is no plan. This is just, I've been figuring out how to handle and direct the show as the show has been going along. And these are the things I can tell you at this point. And I've been doing this 11 years. Ross has been doing this for 2 years. And this Without Apology show is only 2 years old. And it takes a while for shows to find their voice. Opie and Anthony wasn't Opie and Anthony, you know, the first 6 years that they were together. And it's going to take time for us to all get into a group mentality. We're going to have to deal with successes coming our way. We're going to have to deal with money coming our way. We're going to have to deal with failures, spin-outs. Right now, we have to deal with CEO not being around that much. I wholeheartedly believe that he will stick this out to the bitter fucking end. I don't see him quitting. But it doesn't mean he's going to be there. He might go missing for years. But he will always be part of what we're doing. Bel Ann had said, like, he doesn't see the RDA being a financial success for him. I don't know what Bel Ann's plans are. For me, it's we're building this thing. For Ross Dog, it's the same thing. We're building this thing, and the aim is for this thing to hold together and to get us to a new point where we can just do this for a living. And then hopefully get to do all this bonus stuff like the world is going to have to reckon with us along the way. Now, there's a variety of different people that we screw with. I know, like, Ross hates the Comedy Talk, but the Comedy Talk is our entry point to, you know, getting in bed with or fucking with a lot of these bigger people, because that's my world, and that's the only thing I have access to. So I can get us kind of celebrities by staying in the comedy world, but I can't do that going into other worlds because I'm out of my field, and I don't know what I'm saying. All right, last thing I want to talk about. And maybe we'll get into this more when I can do an episode with like Ross or Cosmic or Lane, and we could pull this apart more. But this feels like a lot of dense information, a lot of shop talk, which I'm sure people aren't really into. I get criticism for not promoting enough. In fact, most of the stuff I get criticism for, I actually do, and it's just people are fucking retarded. At first I thought it was a bit. Now I think people are actually just stupid and not paying attention. My job is not to promote. I do promote, but that is not my job. My job is to create. I create the Ian Ellis podcast, Philip Wave cartoons, With Apologies cartoons, and I show up and I conduct the symphony of With Apologies. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of using my brain, using up all the power and energy that I have in my system, while at the same time holding down my job, turning out new comedy material, taking care of my wife and my kid, and then just dealing with the collapses of the world. You know, my sister's going in for surgery right now. My buddy, the C-plot, his life is fucking falling apart. Like, there's other real life shit going on top of all of this other shit. So within our organization, basically, my job is to create, and Bellan's job is to promote, because he's a media guru, and he understands how to game the algorithms, what subreddits to use, what time to post as opposed to other times to post, and he gives me direction on how to create things better, and then once I make it, it's everybody else's job to share the links. Now, there's no excuse for people not sharing the links to Philip Wave and the With Apologies cartoons if you guys are interested in growing the show, because that's a very low barrier of entry to get into an otherwise unbelievably complex world. These are people no one has ever heard of. Tons of infighting, inside jokes, backstories, story arcs. It's a lot for somebody new, but with these With Apologies cartoons, with Philip Wave, I'm giving you something short and accessible that is an entry point to come into the show and hopefully, you know, build a new audience member, get somebody off and running. Like, Andy's a guy, I sometimes don't want to kick him because he's a genuinely sweet human being, but part of the show is getting rid of people that are useless, and he is useless in terms of he can't quite figure out the flow of what is going on, and he goes out of his way to make references to things that have been said in the past, to be in on our inside jokes. Like, he was telling CEO stream up while he was referencing, you know, Cosmic Cam going after Rev. He wasn't coming up with his own bit in that time, but at the same time he shows that he didn't even know who CEO was. And so the things he's trying to call CEO out about, he's trying to alpha CEO, and he doesn't realize that he just looks like a fucking idiot because everything he says is wrong. I don't remember why I brought up Andy, other than he's one of the, sometimes I gotta kick people, and I feel bad about it, but for the sake of the show, for the sake of saying, like, I want this momentum moving forward. I want this to flow easily. I want people here who are entertaining and have something to bring to the table. Those people get all my attention, all my rewards. People that distract from the show, people that lead us in weird directions, anybody who speaks over CEO, especially during these times where we barely have them, you have to be thrown off of the show because you're ruining what it is we're trying to create. Yeah. All right, guys. I hope you understand a little bit more what With Apologies is and the different decisions that I'm making in why and how I'm making the show and why I'm making the show the way it is. And just know that the show is going to change and evolve over time. We don't have the absolute 100% set cast. I'm sure big players are going to drop out and big players are going to come in. There was a time when Cosmic Cam disappeared for like 6 months. But he came back and now he's like one of the main guys. There's a time when Rex didn't want to stream. He just occasionally called in. Now he has his own show and I think he's one of the funniest guys in the entire universe. There's a time when I fucking hated Kenny. But now Kenny is a regular on the show. He's our regular third mic. With apologies, I don't know what RDA is doing. You know, Ross is going to take his show in whatever direction he wants to take it in. And we're going to work with him, or as long as we can, unless we can't. But I think me and Ross have the same understanding that we're in this together. But his show is going to go in what direction it goes in. And with apologies, is going to go in whatever direction I want to go in. And over time, we'll figure out how to mesh those two things together well. But right now, we're just in the infancy stages. And we don't have it all figured out. Guys, the last thing I wanted to talk about. There was an episode where Nick was on. And I say to him, Nick, just be a fool who knows he's a fool. And the CEO says, yeah, just be a character. And he says he can't do that. Because Nick is a guy who takes himself very seriously. Most people in life take themselves seriously. It's one of the fatal flaws in these comedy podcasts and the comedy industry is all of these guys have a brand and they try to protect their brand by not going off message and not presenting themselves in a way that the public might not understand. I say fuck that. I am a fool who knows he's a fool. I do things that are humiliating. This Sunday, Andy and I are having an audition off. Andy is an actor. Andy, if you don't make this tape, if you don't, you know, make an audition tape as if you're sending it in to Steven Spielberg where turn on a camera, introduce your name, introduce the scene, and then act it out, you're fired and you're never allowed on the show again. Because I'm spending this entire week working on my audition reel. I have a cameraman coming out tomorrow. I have my things picked out. Now, I'm making something that is humiliating to me. I'm going to be made fun of ad nauseum for this. I am going to be memed to death over this. But I'm doing that because it's for the sake of funny. It's on the side of funny. I don't need to protect myself. I need to go where the funny goes, even if that means ripping myself to pieces. So if you want to be on the show and you want to have a character, I would say don't be so married to the idea of presenting who you are. Don't be afraid to go off in some spastic, unusual direction that doesn't make any sense. you know, if I just want to shout at Rev as a ghetto gangster black guy, because I think that's the most funny and entertaining thing I can do, that's what I'm going to do. And I don't care if it contradicts everything I've ever said. I don't care if it takes all my BLM material and throws it in the trash. I'm going to do what I think is funny because my premium is on being an entertainer and giving the audience the best show they can have. And guys, don't be afraid to try shouting sometimes. It's a wonderful way to interject energy. I've been talking about energy this whole time. Energy, energy, energy. We need the show to have momentum. We need the people to be awake when they get there. Don't show up tired, lazy, burping. What you been up to? What you been? Fucking come out, spaz out, be wild, be nuts, and take a little bit of direction from me. And if we could just do that, we'll have a great show. All right, deuces.
Yeah, I'm just gonna make up my own words.
Mm-hmm. I had a little bit too much of Hennessy. Just gonna tell you how I feel.
Whatever, who cares? You so fucking precious when you smile. Hit it from the back and drive you wild. Yeah. Girl, I lose myself up in those eyes. I just had to let you know you're mine. Hands on your body, I don't wanna waste some time.
I can't look away. I just
fucking happy you're alive. Swear to God I'm down, if you're down, all you gotta say is right. Yeah. Girl, anything I can do just to make you feel alright. Oh, I just had to let you know you're fine. Running circles from my mind. Even when it's rainy, all you ever do is shine. You on fire, you a star just like Mariah. Man, it's feeling incredible, I turn you to a bride. You're mine. Hands on your body, I don't wanna waste your time. Feels like forever, even if forever's tonight. Just lay with me, waste this night away with me. You're mine. I can look away, I just gotta.